Warehouse rolls. Your stomach will soon sound the alarm.
I bid you heed it.
With a fulfillingly flavorful Firehouse sub fit for a firefighter. Guaranteed. Firehouse subs, the hero of all subs.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. For every $75 spent in-store through Father's Day, get a $25 coupon good June 20th through July 4th.
The greatest leaving us at age 74. We welcome you in to the Monday edition of the Gym Class. Coming your way, 1600 AM, 107.5 and 106.3 FM KGYM. Thank you very much for joining us on a windy Monday. Scott Udash alongside Mark Dukes, former sports editor of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Alex Kunar, producer. As we kick off a brand new week on this Monday, June the 6th, remembrance to... the D-Day heroes as well, as took place on this day back June 6, 1944, on the beaches of Normandy and that surrounding area. And then, of course, we had the Ali story break Friday night into Saturday morning. So a lot of things to remember here on a Monday edition of the program. We welcome you in. We got a great show coming up for you here today. We're going to remember Muhammad Ali. Locally here, Mike Halas is going to be joining us coming up here in just a couple of moments. Mike, of course, the award-winning sports columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. He joins us on Mondays, usually every other Monday during the summertime. And Mike penned a very, very good piece on Sunday, a very good column, talking about Ali, the time he was here in Cedar Rapids. And piggybacking on that, Mark, after we talk with Mike Halas, we're going to welcome into the studio Steve Eden, the former National Golden Gloves champion from Cedar Rapids. And Steve, we believe, it is folks believe, was the last person to join Ali in a boxing ring, in a sparring match, if you will, back at the Five Seasons Center, I believe, in 1980. So we'll talk with Steve about that coming up.
Yeah, we will. Towards the bottom of the hour, I ran into Steve at a local grocery store a few weeks ago, and we were talking about various things, and he said a man from Ohio had called him, was doing a piece or something in regards to Ali, and had found out about this exhibition match in 1982 at the then Five Seasons Center. And Steve said he didn't give it a second thought, but this guy contended, perhaps, that exhibition with Steve Eden might have been the last time Muhammad Ali was in a ring with boxing gloves on. We'll talk to Steve about that.
We will talk to Steve about that, and we'll talk with Mike Halas about that coming up in just a little bit. Your thoughts about the passing of the of an icon, 319-366-1600. That is the Guppies on the Go text line. When you're on the go, we want to know what you think via the Guppies on the Go text line. Standard text messaging rates do apply. Again, that's 319-366-1600. You can also reach us via the phone lines at 319-366-1600. Believe it wasn't a big surprise. There were rumblings throughout the day on Ali's condition. And certainly, it's one of the passings where you kind of mark where you are. Everyone knows where they were. Several different different historical significant events. And I think I will always remember now where I was when I heard Muhammad Ali passed away for the first time. You and I, Mark, we grew up in that era with Ali. Different era, totally, than it is right now. He was as famous outside the ring as he was inside the ring.
He was polarizing to some people, but he was the greatest to many. We were talking in the sports office before the show, and I guess I made the point that Ali said things back in the 60s and 70s that wouldn't be necessarily acceptable today in regards to religion and race and whatnot. And conversely, things were said about him that might have been not too popular these days as well. But he was such a diverse human being. And you mentioned Mike Halas's piece and in Sunday's paper, and he talked with then Gazette sports editor Mike Chapman, who was one of the organizers of the exhibition here in town, and he painted the picture of Ali doing magic tricks here in town for kids and ripping up the check that the local organizing committee had paid him because Ali didn't think that the group made enough money for what the cause was at the time. So a lot of different aspects to Muhammad Ali, and he's true to his word. He wasn't fake.
No, there wasn't a fake thing that came out of the mouth of Muhammad Ali. Of course, people remember him first and foremost as a tremendous heavyweight champion back when boxing was in its heyday, basically. And he also, keep in mind, Ali lost 3 years of his career, probably in the prime of his career, mm-hmm. based on his beliefs as far as his anti-war stand is concerned. The battles with Frazier, the bouts with Foreman, the Sphinxes, people like that. Sonny Liston, of course, to start things off. A different era in boxing. Boxing was one of the kings back then. I mean, you had baseball and you had boxing. Mm-hmm. Those were two of the bigger sports that you were going to find back then. You didn't have the NFL as big as it was now, being the king. You had closed-circuit television performances, I guess.
A lot of it on radio.
A lot of it on radio, absolutely. You would see it the next Saturday on Wide World of Sports. Of course, with the climb of Muhammad Ali was also, you have to have a foil to go along with him. That would be Howard Cosell, who had an astronomical rise in his popularity as well, because he was the foil to Muhammad Ali for all those things. But as polarizing as Ali was, and a great example, and we'll talk with Mike about this coming up, is the story about Ali coming to Cedar Rapids. He was a kind-hearted soul that you'll ever find. I mean, I did not know the man personally, of course, but just reading on his life over the weekend and many years before that, as many people as he probably made angry, he made twice to three times as many happy with what he did.
On the text line, Air Black at 5594, he was the greatest champion and illustrated what speaking and standing up for your beliefs looks like, popular or not. Too young to have loved it, but will always remember the 96 games and how he wasn't afraid to be in the public eye in his condition. Rest in peace, champ.
Yeah. I think that's the one thing that this generation will remember was the lighting of the torch at the Atlanta Summer Olympics in 1996 when Ali did that. And it was a very guarded secret who was going to be lighting the flame, and it ended up to be Muhammad Ali. And That was one of those moments where the old hairs in the back of your neck stand straight up.
There is some dispute whether he's been called the greatest, but is he the greatest boxer of all time? I think folks in our generation and older might dispute that. We're going to have a opportunity for you to answer that question. KGYMradio.com, our poll question: who is the greatest boxer of all time? Muhammad Ali, Rocky Marciano, Joe Louis, Sugar Ray Robinson, or other?
Those are heavyweights, keep in mind.
Yes.
Those were heavyweights. I'm
talking about Floyd Mayweather.
Right. Or Sugar Ray Leonard, or Marvin Hagler, or people like that. That was back. There was no UFC. There was no MMA back then. It was heavyweight boxing was the big thing. And
nowadays, folks can't even name who the heavyweight champion is.
No.
There's probably five or six different organizations. I'd guess Klitschko. I don't know. But I guarantee you, 9 folks out of 10 can't name the heavyweight champion of the world right now.
No.
And that was untrue back in the day.
No.
It was very clear who it was.
Yeah. And they were big events, huge events. I mentioned the Thrilla in Manila. course, that goes down as one of the greatest boxing matches in history, and you can just go right on down the line. But we're going to talk about Ali here, 12 minutes past the hour of 3 o'clock. Michael Oss is going to join us first. He penned a terrific piece in the Cedar Rapids Gazette yesterday about the visit of Muhammad Ali here to our fair city, and that's been 36 years ago already that Ali was here. We'll talk with Mike, and Steve Needon will join us in the back half of the program as well. May have been the last person to climb into the ring with the champ, and we'll do that when we come back. You're listening to the Monday edition of the Gym Class on this June the 6th. Back with more after this here on KGYM.
I've worked with Star for probably 10 years now. Good teammates. I'm Matt Heminger with Ryan Companies. With Star, I feel like they are part of our team, even though we're separate companies. They're very punctual and get back to me fast when there's equipment that I need. I can rely on them. You know, growing up here in Cedar Rapids, and Star has been here the entire time, I would say Star is definitely probably a number one choice for many contractors.
Work with Star Equipment on your job site, starequip.com.
Oh, well, hi there. I'm Murphy, you know, the one the law's named after. Excuse me, please. There's a little computer something I need to take care of. Well, that's better. When it comes to your computer network, it's my job to make sure whatever can go wrong does go wrong. About the only thing that keeps old Murphy at bay is Network Computer Solutions. I put you out of business, and Network Computer Solutions gets you up and running fast. Call NCS at 247-7223. Network Computer Solutions. They're the missing piece to your IT puzzle.
Marion by Moonlight this week gets taken by storm as Jip and the Choosy Mothers, radio station band for KGYM, charges in from out of nowhere to put on a free all-ages show. Bring your blankets and lawn chairs and join KGYM for a big night of fun in Marion Square Park this Thursday night. It's going to be awesome. Marion might never be the same. Event starts at 6. Jip hits the stage at 6:30. Come out and have fun with Jip and the Choosy Mothers from KGYM.
Covering Eastern Iowa sports for more than 40 years combined. UNASH and Dukes. The Gym Class on KGYM.
Back with you here at 3:15, and as you just heard, big night on Thursday nights. This Thursday, Marion by Moonlight, Jif, the Choosy Mothers, they will be there at Marion by Moonlight. Food vendors will be on site at 6 o'clock. It is going to be at the big park over there, the town square in Marion, and it's presented by Farmers State Bank. So bring your lawn chairs, your blankets, friends, family, full night of music from the station band. That'll be, of course, Jif and the Choosy Mothers coming up on Thursday night, beginning at 6:30, out at Marion by Moonlight. And we're going to continue our talk about Muhammad Ali. Michael Oss joining us right now, the sports columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette here on this Monday edition of the program. How you doing, Mike?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right. We're just reminiscing about Muhammad Ali. And by the way, terrific column you had yesterday on just the background. By the way, it was 1982. I was thinking of Steve Eden's 1980 Golden Gloves Championship, but Ali was here in 82 here in Cedar Rapids. But it's always one of those tough moments when a legend passes, especially a legend that had a small part here in our fair city.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how many people I've read about and heard about and heard from who had encounters with Ali at some point in their lives. He was really one of the most accessible celebrities that there's ever been. In fact, I was in Deb's Deli downtown this noon and just having lunch in there with Scott Docterman in the Gazette, and Scott looks up and he sees his photo of the wall of Ali with Emil Alec and his wife taken in an airport. They happen to be, Ali flew commercial and, you know, just always had people coming up to him for autographs and photos. And there he was staring down on us as we were having our lunch.
Poll question today, every day, sponsored by Emil's Hideaway. Nice segue. Mike, reading your piece on Sunday, I was thinking to myself, I was an assistant sports editor at the time to Mike Chapman, who I think you quoted him and had some great stories, but I'm thinking to myself, why the hell didn't I go to that?
You know, I was had just started here myself, and I just have a very vague memory of that happening here. I didn't go either. And I think that there was just so little promotion. I don't know the backstory, but it was just something they slapped together pretty quickly, and I don't think that there was, you know, I don't think very many of us were very aware of it.
No, I would agree. I mean, I'm thinking back, did a little bit of research anyway. I was a little younger than you guys back then. Not a whole lot, but a little bit.
Well, don't throw Halas under the bus just because I'm there.
I'm not doing that. But, you know, there wasn't a lot of publicity to it. It was kind of a very stealth-like entry into Cedar Rapids and exit.
Right. I heard yesterday from somebody here in town, Moshe Ronick, who said that the thing was on a Sunday afternoon at what was then called the Five Seasons Center. And then they took Ali to the Islamic Center here in Cedar Rapids, and with very little word of mouth, it was one of those deals where the news spread like crazy, and the place was just packed with people who came to see him there, and he signed, you know, and posed for everybody, and I guess it was, I mean, Mo himself had a photo, showed a photo of him with Ali, and it was just, man, you know, right there in the heart of town, and there he was. 2 days earlier, he'd been with the Pope.
The guy that was in the ring that Sunday with Muhammad Ali, Steve Eaton, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. You talked to Steve. Mike, what did you learn from him about that day?
Well, I wrote something about Steve's connection with Ali back in, 2002, when the movie Ali came out with Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
That made me think of him and that day. And this was sort of revisiting that, really, with Steve. And you're going to talk to him a little later, so I don't want to take any of away from, you know, his recollections. It's very interesting. I was in the... You were a sports writer at the time, Mark. You sent me to the Atlanta Olympics, and I was in Olympic Stadium that Friday night when Ali lit the torch. That ceremony, I mean, between getting there and sitting there, it was probably 4 or 5 hours, you know, and you know, say what you will about the opening ceremony, so much of it just drags on and on and on, and I don't remember much, but I tell you, I remember I had my binoculars on that ramp, and as Janet Evans was running the torch up to the top of the ramp, and I thought, well, okay, Janet Evans is the final person. She's the one who's going to light the torch. Yeah, it would have been a great selection. She was an accomplished swimmer for the United States and, you know, a great representative of Olympic sports in this country. But then when Ali emerged from the shadows, and it was just one of those goosebump moments that you never forget, even if you were just watching it on TV.
I think I would have had a Kleenex out at the time, probably.
Yeah, and it made me think, you know, this was 1996, and it was just, it wasn't that long ago. Before then, when he wasn't universally beloved, and it wasn't that he changed, it was kind of that the rest of the country changed. Kind of came around in seeing things a little sort of the way he saw them. And, of course, he had Parkinson's, and it was clear that he was not, you know, physically he just wasn't who he used to be. And you know, couldn't help but find him a very sympathetic figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Mike Halas joining us here at 3:22 on the Monday edition of the Gym Class. And outside the ring, that's what made Ali so polarizing. The fact that you had a cross-section of America that weren't fans, especially back in the 70s of Muhammad right. Ali. And then he would show the humanitarian side of him, coming to a Cedar Rapids, tearing up checks, things like that, to help out organizations, to fly commercial, get his picture taken. I don't think you'd see that. I know you wouldn't see that in this day and age.
No, and do you ever remember him endorsing anything commercially?
Not really.
I don't either. And he saw himself, I think, as an ambassador. And an ambassador for his religion, yes, but just a goodwill ambassador in general. And once he got past boxing, and even before, but especially after, I think, I mean, you talk about things like peace and love and understanding, and I think that's what he was all about. When he was a young man, and there was a lot of fire and brimstone and anger and so forth, and, if you walked a few miles in his shoes, you'd probably share the same things. But he basically was the opposite of that as his life got longer, and he left that impact with people. I also think that, a lot of our dads probably hated the guy. You know, they felt threatened by him, and when he refused to enter the Army, there were a lot of people who didn't like that, and people call him draft dodger, and there are people to this day who still do. I heard from one of them in my email this weekend. But he wasn't a draft dodger. I mean, he went to the draft board, and he heard his name called, and he didn't step forward, and he said, I'll accept whatever punishment they give me, and if they're going to put me in jail, I'll go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a whole lot of people in this country from the same era, future congressmen and senators and presidents and vice presidents, who used connections and whatever else they had at their avail to stay out of Vietnam, to stay out of harm's way. And technically, they weren't draft dodgers, but realistically, they kind of were. You know, so Ali stood on principle, and what he did was a whole lot of people, as time went by, said, yeah, that really doesn't seem like it is a just war. And, looking back on it historically, I think the vast majority of Americans would say it wasn't.
Mike, you've had an opportunity to interview a lot of famous people in your career. In fact, your Twitter photo panel includes an interview with O.J. Simpson, but that's neither here nor there. My question is to you, if you had 5 minutes to spend with Muhammad Ali, and of course you won't have that opportunity, what would you most like to ask him?
I don't know. That's a tough question on the spot. I guess just what he felt his greatest contribution was to the world. What was it? What was it that you feel the proudest of that people are going to remember you by? And I don't think he would have said it was knocking out Sonny Liston and beating Joe Frazier and George Foreman. I tend to think it's more of the just trying to reach people in a personal way, I guess.
I agree with you. I think that would come down the way down the line.
But you know what? I was a kid when he was in the prime of his career, and you remember things when you're a kid that, they're bigger than life. You go through your whole life thinking that those were the most important things ever. But I tell you what, your younger listeners, and by younger I mean 20s, 30s, I don't think they can fathom what it was like when a Muhammad Ali fight was coming up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's anything in sports today that even approaches it in terms of build up and interest around the world and just electricity.
20-year-olds will tell you Brock Lesnar's next fight's a big deal, okay?
Yeah, no. And it was the force of his personality. When he was on Wide World of Sports on Saturday afternoons in interviews with Howard Cosell, you couldn't not watch it. I mean, it was just a great theater. It was, you never knew what was going to happen, and it was extraordinary.
Yeah, it was. And you had these events, and you didn't have everywhere you look, or you didn't have advertising. You didn't have
They weren't televised.
They were, yeah, most of them were. There, some were closed circuit, and yeah, you'd see them the next Saturday.
Scott, the first time Ali fought Frazier, shortly after Ali was, you know, allowed to resume his career, I was in middle school, and I remember the buildup to that was, I mean, when we were kids, you were either for Ali or you were for Frazier, and it was testy between the two sides, you know, to the point where you'd square off at recess and when you'd play, you know, football or soccer or whatever. And I remember the night that they fought, it wasn't on TV, and you couldn't see it anywhere in Cedar Rapids, but I would listen on the radio. Yep. I think it was one of the wire services gave round-by-round updates. And they told you what had happened in the round, but they didn't know how the judges voted, so you're left to your own devices. But the updates, and you sat there by the radio just, you know, every 3 minutes, okay, what's happening, what's happening, what's happening? Such a different world, but yet, in its own right, so memorable.
Yeah.
Mike, we're going to bring in Steve Eden here in just a couple, 3 minutes, but a couple other subjects that you've covered since the last time we've talked, and one is last weekend, the Big 12 talking about going to a college football playoff, divisions. I think you tell me how serious you were about suggesting UNLV and San Diego State to join the league, but just your overall impressions of that dialogue.
Well, it's what they figure the conference championship football game is worth, $25 million to the conference. So, going to have one. I don't think it makes any difference as to whether it gets them into helps them get a team into the playoff or not. It might hurt them more years than it helps them. I don't know. It doesn't matter. They're doing it for the money. Every other major conference has one, and on that weekend, the Big 12 is forgotten about, and you can't have that if you're a major conference. As far as UNLV and San Diego State, yeah, that's tongue-in-cheek, but if I were, you know, an Iowa State fan, I'd make plans to go see the Cyclones in San Diego or Las Vegas. If they, you know, add Cincinnati and Houston to the league, I'll just stay home and watch on TV.
Got to get to San Diego and got to get to Vegas. The other thing is you attended Zach Johnson's induction into the Iowa Golf Hall of Fame in Des Moines last week. And big deal, obviously, when you go into a Hall of Fame. Showed how big it was to Zach. He skipped this year's memorial to be in Des Moines in person. And you followed Zach his entire career from the very start through the Open Championship last year. And I know Zach was honored, very honored, to go into this particular Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's all about where you're from and your roots. And that's always meaningful, I think, to anybody. It's interesting. I looked at those names, those 68 other people who are in that Hall of Fame, and, you know, most of them had great amateur careers. Some of them had great pro careers here in the state, playing for years and years. But very few of them made a national impact. And, you know, and to be honest, maybe none. So people say, well, that's a slam dunk that he's in the Iowa Golf Hall of Fame. Of course it is. But now, it wasn't going to be a complete Hall of Fame until he was in it. You're not eligible until you're 40 years old. He turned 40 this year. And he seemed clearly touched by it all. And the fact that it was held on the Drake campus only added to it.
Yeah, and good to see that. He, of course, had a big part in the new practice facility.
Yeah, they were telling me that Tom Crean and one of the other coaches who had teams in the NCAA basketball tournament at the Des Moines Regional came over and saw Drake's facility and were jealous in many regards. So I think that's interesting. And what that might say is that, you know, facilities matter, and maybe Drake basketball is something to keep an eye on here and down the road.
Hey, Mike, you ever decide to sell your house, there's a guy here in the studio I'd be glad to help. Appreciate it, man.
Well, you know what? he could get it done.
Yes, he can.
Yes, good stuff going on right there. Hey, are you going by chance to the U.S. Open?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to...
I was at Oakmont the last time it was there in 07. It was the first major after Zach won the Masters.
Yep.
I have never been to a golf course that was that looked as difficult.
I think it's the hardest golf course in America.
Yeah, I wouldn't surprise me if it were.
I mean, the pros are talking about if you stay single digits over par, you got a good chance to win in a couple of weeks.
That could be, you know. The greens are diabolical, I remember that.
Yeah. Five over one last time, so
yeah.
I think you take five over right now.
Yeah. Oh, and I'll tell you something else. The next time I talk to you guys, I will have tried to repeat my glories from last year in the World Series of Poker.
Ah.
God dang it, Mike.
Mark wants to go with you out to the fabulous Las Vegas.
But there's still time to get a little piece of the action, if you know what I mean.
I'll be in touch.
That'll be coming up in a couple of weeks. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, if I make it back.
Don't bet on 6-3 offsuit, okay? That's all I got to say.
Hey, Mike, appreciate it, and good talking with you. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Mike Halas. Check his work at thegazette.com, and also he's on Twitter, at Halas. Good follow right there. Talking about Ali and also about Zach Johnson. 3:34, we'll take a break, come back, and remember more about Muhammad Ali. We'll do that when we return. You're listening to the Gym Class right here on KGYM.
Hey, what's up? We love Burger King grilled dogs. They're made with 100% beef, and they're 100%. They're so good, they make us want to sing like...
I can't believe it. Burger King made a grilled dog made with 100% beef. Flame grilled anytime you want. You can try it in classic or chili cheese.
Flame grilled and made with 100% beef, starting at just $1.99. Get a grilled dog now at participating Burger King restaurants. Flame grilling hot dogs since 2016. Price and participation vary.
Hi, can I have 2 steak tacos?
Flour or corn?
Oh, no tortillas. And no steak. Also add turkey, lettuce, and tomato. And just put it between 2 slices of bread.
You know this is a taco truck, right?
As a small business owner, you've got enough to deal with. Let the experts at Progressive insure your business so you can focus on whatever that was. With over 30 commercial auto and business coverage options, we'll build a plan that's right for you.
Oh, I'll have Swiss on that too. Thank you.
Visit ProgressiveCommercial.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. For every $75 spent in-store through Father's Day, get a $25 coupon good June 20th through July 4th.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
At the gym, we know good sportsmanship matters during a game and in life.
And we want to recognize good sports, like you, with KGYM's Community MVP.
So if your nonprofit group is holding an event to help folks around here, let us know.
Just go to KGYMradio.com, click on Community MVP, and give us all the details.
Because you deserve most valuable player status for doing something great.
And we want to help you get the word out.
KGYM's Community MVP, brought to you by Fairfax State Savings Bank.
They go to the ballpark to watch the game. Scott Unash and Mark Dukes, the Gym Class, KGYM.
3:37, back with you here on the Monday edition of the Gym Class on KGYM. Coming up tomorrow, Cal Eldred will join us. We'll talk Major League Baseball and college baseball. We will do that on the Tuesday edition of the show. Wednesday, it's Caddy Smack. It is back. Brian Haas and Rick Swann will join us here in studio. And got a good show lined up for you coming up on Wednesday. But, Mark, we're going to continue our remembrances of the great Muhammad Ali here. And as we talked about with Michael Oz, and as he penned, there was an event here in 1982. A lot of people I don't think knew about at the time, but they're learning more and more about.
Yeah, we're happy to be joined by Steve Eden, Cedar Rapids Washington grad, co-grad. Yeah, they let him out a year ahead of me. I don't know. We've never compared grade point averages, but.
Oh, my gosh, we got a Warrior Jayhawk.
I was all cell block. You're ahead of you.
But Steve, of course, was part of that exhibition in 1982 with Muhammad Ali. And as Mike Loss described, kind of a lightly publicized event. But nevertheless, 2 days prior, Ali had an audience with Pope John Paul II. And on that Sunday, Steve, you had an audience with the greatest. How about that?
Well, you know what? You think back about it, I didn't remember the Pope part, but after getting, it was kind of a street fight with him at that time, and something you never forget.
How did it all come about?
Well, I was contacted by some people. I think they were with the Islamic Center here in Cedar Rapids, and asked me if I would do an exhibition with Muhammad Ali. Well, it took me about one second to get it out of my mouth. Yes. And the Cedar Rapids Boxing Club put the ring together, and just showed up that day, and there he was. So it was pretty weird introduction from him to me. The first thing out of Muhammad Ali's mouth in that Five Seasons Center was, "Are you calling me a nigger?" And you could hear a pin drop, and I just said, "What?" And he repeated it, and it's echoing through there, and I'm sweating, you know. I mean, I'm not the brightest bulb, but I said, "No, I just said you're a little bigger." And I think I finally got one over on him at that time. And so he had been doing some magic tricks and some levitation and a lot of stuff for the kids around town. And then it came my turn, and we went 2-3 minute rounds with a 1 minute rest in between, and kind of simulated like any boxing that you would do down at the gym, where you don't really go for a knockout for the guy, but you could take the body as hard as you want. But that day, it was interesting because I had kind of an advantage of Muhammad because I knew how he fought. And I'm a natural left-hander, but I was ambidextrous. I would fight left-handed, right-handed, whatever I could do to make it work. And but we were fighting with these thumbless gloves from South Africa. And he'd not seen them before. These local guys had them. They were trying to introduce those to the USA Boxing Club. And they were interesting gloves because the thumb was sewn in. So it made for a better fist. But you could not get a thumb in the eye. But the one thing that Muhammad did not know about that day was you can't hang on either because there's no thumb. So as with any sparring session, we went into a clinch one time, and he tried to grab my elbow, and he couldn't hold it, and I got him a decent body punch. I kind of oomphed him, and his eyes got a little big, and we did it again a little later, and I caught him another one, and then he was going to play as hard as I wanted to play. He literally lifted me off the ground with a 3 or 4 punch combination, and my vision went blank. And as my toe reached the canvas again, this time I threw a left hook, and not knowing where it was going, I kind of caught him on the chin just enough that I saw his knee kind of do a little twitch, and then I saw his eyes get real big. And after that, it was the Thrilla in Manila. And I was doing everything I could just to keep him off me. And so after the fight, he had an entourage of about 25, 30 people pulling him along, and he sees me, and he said, "Stop." And they kind of kept shuffling me. He said, "I said stop." So that procession stopped, and we had a nice little private conversation. He was really complimentary at the time. He thought I was a turning pro or was a pro. And I said, no, this is kind of the end of my stop right here. I'd won the Golden Gloves, National Golden Gloves title the year before, and was up for the Olympics, which Mr. Carter was kind enough to cancel because Russia was in Afghanistan, and now we're living there. So I had had 150, 60 fights, never had my nose broken, never was officially knocked out, and I ended up fighting 6-7 guys, including Muhammad Ali, that became world champions. And I thought, you know what? What a good time to quit. Mm. I still had one or two brain cells left. And I was told by a guy from Ohio here a couple months ago that I might have been the last guy in the ring to do any work with Ali like that. So I always kind of consider that, if that was his retirement party, that was a great party for me as well. Mm. So.
And a good way to go out. And the details of it, Ali wasn't dressed as, he wasn't in his boxing silk shorts, and he was just in street clothes, right?
It was street clothes, yeah. Yep. And I offered, I brought boxing gear for him, and actually I had a Ali jersey that was given to me by a guy named Chuck Robinson, who fought for the Muhammad Ali team. And they came to Iowa, and I was one of the stars from the three states that, and was the only winner of that bout. And this guy and I became friends at the Olympic Training Center. And we were heading to France. Oh, this was early 1980, and we were going to go to France. He'd already been there. Well, I fought over in Illinois against the All-Navy champion. I lost a split decision, and Bob Serkine, who was head of the United States Boxing Club, told me that my performance wasn't good enough, that he's not taking me to France with that team, and took one of the guys I'd already beaten on that plane. Well, that plane crashed, killed everybody on that plane.
Oh, no.
So it was kind of good news, bad news for me at that time. But that's when I told Bob Serkine, I don't care about that France trip. I'm going to win the National Golden Gloves boxing title. He just said, okay. And so luckily we got there, and I won it. So it was just an interesting career. And I look back, it's 30-some years, and it almost seems surreal at the time that I was really doing that, because my sport was always wrestling through high school and college. And I took up boxing after I graduated, because I did not win that national wrestling tournament. I had my eyeball gashed open with 12 stitches, and Coach Bremner disqualified me from the national tournament, which ironically
was
at
Coe
that
year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First time ever. So that was, I was kind of a different breed in that. That's not quite like a collegiate sport, the boxing, but when we'd travel, it was always entertaining because it always drew a crowd, whether you were fighting or walking down the street. Mm-hmm. So,
Steve Eden joining us on the Gym Class at 3:46. Steve was in the ring with Muhammad Ali in Cedar Rapids in 1982 for an exhibition, and he's kind enough to join us on the show today. Steve, I wonder what your reaction was when you heard Ali had died.
You know what? My heart just dropped because I knew I'd heard that he was going into the hospital. And you think, okay, you know, might be pneumonia, just something that, you know, this guy was an Iron Man. He's invincible. That's not going to take him down. And then all of a sudden, later that night, my wife came out and said, Steve, Muhammad Ali passed away. And you can just feel the blood just drain from your whole body. And then it brings back every memory you had of Muhammad Ali, from his days in the Olympics to his title fights, and of course, my exhibition with him in 1982, which, you know, it was just one of those things that you were just almost to the point where, do you believe it? You know? So, great man lost, and it wasn't just the sport of boxing. That guy was champion to a lot of people all over the world. And when you know Muhammad Ali and you don't know the president of the United States, I mean, that's a gift.
Well, and I think that just goes to show how big he was outside the ring as well. Back in the 70s and even in 1982, he was still the most recognizable person, I would say, on the face of the planet back then. He probably held that title for a long, long time, maybe even to last Friday night.
I you know, and now everybody looks at that, and of course he was known as a draft dodger and everything else, but you watched what he did, and if you ever want to see a good documentary, look up When We Were Kings. When We Were Kings, it was George Foreman and Ali fighting over in Zaire, and I think it was, well, whoever the dictator was at that time, I think it was Foreman that got cut, and he said, hey, look, I got cut in a sparring, and we're going to go back to the United States. When I heal, we'll come back and fight. And the dictator said, no, you're going to stay here, and then when you heal, then you're going to fight, and then you're going back. And so they all agreed. I don't know how that worked out, but Foreman was kind of a tough guy at that time and thought he was invincible and did not interact with the locals, where Ali is going around meeting, greeting, being a part of every tribesman there. And then the fight goes on, and it almost gives you a chill when you're watching Angelo Dundee and Ali getting ready for that fight. And it looks like they're heading to a funeral, you know, and all of a sudden Ali perks up and says, hey, you know what I'm going to do? And they look at him, and he's silent for a second. He says, I'm going to dance. And this kind of kept going to a crescendo until they get in the ring, and then that's when Ali invented his rope-a-dope and chopped that giant down. I mean, just watching that, and I thought of that right away when I saw George Foreman the other day on TV. What a gentleman. Mm-hmm. What a gentleman. I mean, it changed his life to the
better. He didn't
want
to fight him
well.
Again.
Mm-hmm. No. No, and you remember what Foreman did to Joe Frazier, and you're thinking, well, Joe Frazier, you look at the three fights with Ali, and you think nobody's going to touch Foreman. And it was just ingenious when he came up with the rope-a-dope and mm-hmm. let that guy punch himself out. And I've watched that a dozen times, and you still get excited seeing how that worked out.
Back to that exhibition in 1982 that you had with Muhammad Ali, and they call it a sparring match. And having never been a boxer, I don't imagine it was quite like the sparring matches at the Cedar Rapids Boxing Club. Did anybody say to you ahead of time that this is off limits, or did you just pretty much know you're going to feel it out and go from there?
Well, while we were, I knew it was going to be a sparring match, and I knew that also I kind of wanted to test myself against the best in the world. And so, I mean, I wasn't out there throwing big straight hand lefts and rights, trying to connect onto his jaw. I was just trying to really, as any sparring session, get to his body and then see if how hard he wanted to play. He was going to play as hard as I wanted to play. And when I got his attention, he was playing really hard. And like I said, he was in street clothes, so it was like a street fight. I don't care if the guy's in a bathrobe. Those punches were still the same as with anybody that's throwing them. And so, yeah, I took it to the limit. And then he took it back. So and that's the thing afterwards. I mean, he was definitely really kind to me, but you just realized how fast, how precise that guy was. He had just lost that crown, I think, 4 or 5 months before. Mm-hmm. So his boxing prowess was still intact. His verbal skills were, you could just kind of see things were slipping a little bit. But, man, at the other end of those gloves, you felt it. And you know what? I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah. The memento you have, and I believe Mike wrote about it on Sunday, still have that picture that you took that day on your wall. just as a memento to what took place and how special that day was.
You know, and that thing's starting to fade a little bit too. Not the memory.
Are we all, Steve?
No, I'm talking about the ink that he put on there. But yeah, no, I keep that. I look at that about daily and now. And, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of forget as the years go by what really took place. Because I've got a copy of the only fight they showed in 1980 at the National Golden Gloves. It was a complete fight, was mine. I've got that tape somewhere. And my wife was asking me last night, where's that tape? I don't know. You know, and I know some guys around town have copies, and some have copies. Maybe Dolan or somebody has copies of that fight that was on there. But I was watching that the other night, and I was almost absorbed back into the TV as I'm watching it like I was there. Mm-hmm. And I can remember kind of catching Ali, and then you can see it on that film where he kind of steps back and gives me the eye. And that's when I knew things were changing, you know, because he was doing a lot of jawing on there as well. And I always kind of like to do some jawing myself, as Dukes will tell you, but he was the king of it. And it's one of those things, was just always timing. And it just happened to be the end of my career and apparently his as well. So I'll do it again if anybody else wants to get in there.
It's great memories, Steve, and Scott, and I don't know how many people. Steve is a 3-time conference wrestling champion at Co. Bad, bad handball player. I mean that in a good way.
But was he a good golfer?
He's a good tennis player, too.
Good tennis. No,
him on the golf course. I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was hoping that you could get me on that Zach Johnson. You know, I'm not invited. I know they have local celebrities. There you go. I've got the best foot wedge in the game.
Well, we'll see if we can all work that out.
Yeah.
Not a bad left hook either in the day. Huh?
No, not bad right there. But Steve, appreciate it. And thanks for taking time to come down here and reminisce about Muhammad's visit to Cedar Rapids. And you're part of history right there. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, and we got a couple minutes remaining here. I want to let you know, first of all, we've got Stanley Cup hockey coming your way tonight at 7 o'clock. That will be game 4 between San Jose and Pittsburgh. And also, a chance to catch the gym live this Friday down at Coach's Corner Sports Pub in Iowa City, 749 Mormon Truck Boulevard, that, of course, in the Walden Square. We're going to be down there. We're going to talk a little bit about horse racing that day, and then we'll have another topic to talk about on Friday as well.
Poll question, KGYMRadio.com, brought to you by Emil's Hideaway on First Avenue Southeast. Maybe Steve would like to answer this. Who is the greatest boxer of all time? Would it be Muhammad Ali, Rocky Marciano, Joe Louis, Sugar Ray Robinson, or someone else? I think we're just talking about heavyweights there.
I think heavyweights.
Well, again, I mean, there's nobody better than Muhammad Ali. And when you take 3.5 years of his prime earnings.
That's a good point right there.
You know what I mean? And then the comeback after 3.5 years. I mean, no offense, this isn't golf where you get a little bruise on your toe and head back out. I mean, that was the one thing that made me train harder than anybody, was fear of dying. And that's the only sport that you don't know if you're coming out of there vertical or horizontal. And to take 3.5 years and then come back and regain his title, nobody can do that. Mm. I don't care how good they are, and especially in that heavyweight division. I fought 10 heavyweights. I moved up one weight and won another state title in 81 as a heavyweight. Those guys hit a lot harder than the light heavyweights. And then to have 3.5 years off and then come back and get in that kind of shape and mental – the mental things that it does to a person, he was unbelievable. Yeah. Still the best.
Thanks, Stu.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow with another edition of the Gym Class. That will be at 3 right here on KGYM. APC, Todd and Tyler, come your way next. We'll talk to you tomorrow afternoon at 3 here on KGYM.
Save all month long during the anniversary sale at Keeks Career Apparel. Select in-stock items are 30 to 50% off right now. Everything from jeans and composite toe boots to high visibility and flame retardant clothing, all from